Welcome back to A People's Guide to Publishing. I'm Joe Beal, the founder and CEO of Microcosm Publishing and Distribution. I'm also the author of A People's Guide to Publishing, which distills what I've learned from selling millions of books over the past 25 years.
I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the editorial and marketing director here at Microcosm. We are an independent midlist publisher based in Portland, Oregon. We have 14 employees, over 650 titles in print with 20 to 40 new books per year, and we distribute thousands of titles from other publishers.
We started this podcast so that we can share what we've learned with newer publishers so that you can learn from our mistakes.
Or perhaps you just want to better understand the publishing industry.
This week, we are going to talk about a word that I had a very difficult time researching the current definition of when I was writing the book. The publishing midlist.
Joe, what is the midlist?
The midlist.
Sorry.
That's pretty good. Nothing to be sorry about. The midlist is everything sort of between what we now call micro-publishing and bestsellers. And
so, like, what? Is like what? Give us some like metrics or something.
So the midlist is a set of expectations more than it's a set of hard numbers. You know, because obviously sometimes something is expected to land firmly in the midlist and it does become a bestseller, and sometimes a book is expected to be in the midlist and it sells 23 copies.
So a midlist book is a book that has like steady, solid sales, but nothing, like, breaking the curve.
Not necessarily. I mean, this book could burn bright for a brief period and then expire in exasperated breaths.
Would you say the midlist, though, is, like, is it related to being like, an evergreen book? It's kind of like a publishing company's bread and butter, no?
Nope. Midlist just means the middle.
Just the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like getting a medium coffee.
Yeah, and like a medium coffee, few people are drawn to the midlist. You know, they really like to think of their ideas as being popular bestsellers, or they like to think of their ideas as being more for just like friends and family.
So you're talking about authors or publishers?
Everybody, you know? It's like, it takes a little bit of experience to realize how great the midlist is.
What are the benefits of the midlist?
So, as we've talked about, I feel like extensively for 70 or 80 episodes now, the real problem in publishing is expectations either being too high or too low. And the midlist is sort of your square, like, we can do this. These are some realistic, attainable goals. And, you know, for even a small press, the midlist is basically like 3,000 copies as a bench. For some publishers, it might be as low as like 1,500 copies as a sales bench.
Like lifetime sales or like in a year?
Lifetime.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, that doesn't sound like very many. So it kind of does beg the question of like, okay, well, should we do this? Is it worth it? And the reason the answer to both of those questions is yes, is because it's much less certain and more difficult to say we're going to sell 50,000 or 100,000 copies of this book. Because, as you know, as we have discussed, as the book says, many times when you set a realistic and manageable expectation, you exceed it.
Mm-hmm. And, like, honestly, you don't have as much control over what book will become a bestseller or not as you think, even if you're a huge publishing company.
And a lot of times, you know, events like COVID or, you know, any just sort of news item happening the same week of your publication can really dramatically shatter those expectations. So you want to, you know, not put all your eggs in one basket, essentially. Like, the midlist is a way to say, I am creating a large body of work over many years for the purpose of, you know, not just writing one book and then being dashed when it doesn't become a bestseller.
So it used to be, like, in the 80s, 90s even, authors could make a reasonable living just writing midlist books, like, one a year, right?
Yeah. One a year, right, and then with the sales of their back catalog. Yeah, that's true.
And that's not the case anymore, though.
It's the case still. It's just not the case for as many people. You know, there
do we,
was...
Do we have a clear villain to blame for that?
Oh, there's... I mean, yeah. And there's a couple here. So, it depends how far back you want to go. In the 70s, it was the consolidation... I think 70s into the 80s, really. It was the consolidation of the bookstore into chains. In the 80s to the 90s, it was the consolidation of the publishers into conglomerates. And in the 90s to the zeros, it was the Big A, who really just slaughtered your ability to make a living as an author.
So, I read recently that the Midlist is dead. Is that true?
The Midlist is not dead, obviously. Yes. There is still a lot... I mean, by definition, the one that I just made up, it is impossible for the Midlist to be dead because there will always be a place between micro-publishing and bestsellers. And that place will always be the Midlist.
Why are people saying the Midlist is dead?
Because they're still thinking of the Midlist like they did in the 80s, where, you know, the idea being that you can make a sturdy income by writing a barbecue cookbook, you know. Now there are simply too many barbecue cookbooks because of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, while, yes, you can write a barbecue cookbook, the consolidated HarperCollins industrial complex is not going to give you the $25,000 advance that you once probably could have garnered to do that as a layperson. And so, you know, what is more realistic is, like, you might be able to get, like, a $2,000 advance from somebody that makes books like that, but maybe not even that, you know? And it really... And so this is what I hear authors complaining about all the time, is the fact that they are now also responsible for the marketing of their books. And, you know, and this is sort of a way to prevent those investments from becoming just more tax write-offs, you know. In summary, the best part about the Midlist is, you know, a case like Dr. Faith Harper, where, you know, we set out to publish her first book. We expected...
Unfuck your brain.
We firmly thought, I firmly thought, that we could solidly sell at least 5,000 copies of it. And we sold that in a matter of weeks. And then we sold another 10,000 and another 10,000. And here we are. We're coming up upon... It'll be 3 years in a few months here. And we've already crossed 100,000 copies. And we're still going. But that's still a mid-list book. You know, we didn't market it like a bestseller. We didn't buy all these placements. You know, we didn't get any key reviews. We didn't even really have, sorry, Faith, the amount of release plan that one might expect out of a midlist book from an innovative author. And the part of the reason is that she had quite a few follow-up books. She has a lot of ideas and a lot of energy. Whereas, you know, for most people, if their first book sells 3,500 copies, they don't think of that as a success, even though the average book still only sells what I would expect to be about 1,500 copies.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a publisher-supported book, or about 100 copies, if it's a self-published book, and that's in the lifetime of the book. You know, so it's important to have perspective, too, but utilizing these numbers, you know, it really, if the purpose of publishing a book is to change culture, then publishing more books gives you, like, far greater number of opportunities to achieve that goal.
And that has been the Midlist.
Mm-hmm.
Get your coffee medium.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at microcosm.
On Facebook at microcosm publishing.
On Instagram at microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.